This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Hi folks, welcome along to Soundtrackin' with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to another episode of us diving into the minds to talk about film and music. Just before we get into this week's episode, I wanted to just draw your attention to a couple of things that are coming up. One that might be slightly off your radar and one that most definitely will be. The first of those is a fantastic little film called She Rides Shotgun. It stars the fabulous Taron Egerton, and it's been directed by Nick Rowland. Now, Nick, we are such a fan of on this show. Calm with Horses was the last film that we spoke to him about on the podcast that he'd done the score with Blank Mass, who's also worked on the score for She Rides Shotgun. It's a film that's kind of had a really unfortunate journey, to be honest. It had a release in the States earlier on this year, and then with regards to it getting distribution outside of the States and in the UK, even Nick has no idea what's happened, and the pair of them, Nick and Taron, are absolutely devastated that the film hasn't had the support here in the UK that it so deserves. I was lucky enough that I kind of managed to get them into a cinema months ago now to show the film and do a post screening Q&A, and then also whilst the film was on, I recorded an episode of the podcast at the time with the hope that the film was going to make it into cinemas, but it never did. It's now going to be available from the 26th of November, so this week, for you guys to stream on Amazon Prime. So please do go and seek out the film. It's called She Rides Shotgun. I think it's one of Taron's most brilliant performances of his entire career. And just gives us another insight to where and what he's capable of as an actor. And also just Nick as a storyteller is absolutely brilliant. So it's called She Rides Shotgun. It's going to be available from the 26th of November on Prime. And then on Friday, we will have Taron and Nick joining us on, as I said, that episode of the podcast that I recorded months ago. So happy to share that with you on Friday. And then next week, we have the Duffer Brothers, who are going to be talking Stranger Things and the finale and the journey for them. So that's obviously coming to Netflix this week, the kind of first installment of the finale. And we'll share my chat with the Duffer Brothers with you next Monday, the 1st of December. How is it December already? So there's a couple of things just coming up that I just wanted to draw your attention to. But really happy and excited to welcome back to Soundtrackin' Ryan Johnson, who joins us to discuss the third of his Knives Out mysteries, Wake Up Dead Man. Stars Daniel Craig as Master Detective Benoit Blanc. The extraordinary ensemble cast includes Josh O'Connor, Glenn Close, Josh Brolin, Mila Kunis, Andrew Scott, Jeremy Renner, Thomas Hayden Church. It's just an amazing cast, and you can really see how every one of them gets something out of being part of this ensemble, but as individuals as well. As I said, it's the latest installment. Benoit Blanc takes on a case that brings him into the orbit of charismatic priest Monsieur Jefferson Wicks and his devout congregation. So when a mysterious death occurs, our hero must navigate a web of secrets and simmering tensions within the community to explore the truth. It is so good. Now, just before we get to Ryan, I wanted to point you in the direction of an exclusive interview you can find on our YouTube channel, Soundtrack and Extra. It's with the wonderful James Wood, showrunner for the Amazon Prime TV show Malice, which if you haven't seen yet, please do dive into it. It's wonderful. Stars David Duchovny, Carice Van Houten and Jack Whitehall in a brilliant turn as a Manny, whose intentions may not be as pure as they seem on surface level. Here's James, who explains how early music came into his process.
The first episode of Malice, I looked it up. knowing I was going to be talking to you. September 2021.
Oh, wow.
The first page I wrote had Mick Jagger's Sweet Thing on it. It was literally the first thing I ever wrote. And here we are 4 or 5 years later, and it's there. So there's a few of them I write in. Leonard Cohen was written into the scripts very early on. And
wow.
Got like a big tone for the show. So there's a few tracks that I've very much wrote in early, and you don't necessarily expect them to make it all the way through production and the process, but they really have. So that's great. And then obviously other people bring other ideas.
Yeah.
Brilliant music supervisors. I've always loved The Doors' Peace Frog, but I didn't know that was going to turn up, and somehow that worked.
But when you're making these choices, what is, I guess, like you mentioned there, like the lyrics sometimes make it in. So it's almost they're driving narrative, they're drawing emotion of a character, they're driving a kind of like a feeling of something. It's not just a case of got to get Leonard Cohen in. Do you know what I mean?
No, not that. It's definitely so putting Mick Jagger's Sweet Thing from whenever it was, early 90s. It just felt like that was Jamie Tanner's character. He's the certain age that he would have been listening to that in the early 90s.
Wants to be in.
The thrusting beat of it just felt, it had the sort of swagger that you wanted for this venture capitalist who's a bit pleased with himself and full of himself. And it had a sort of strutting coolness to it that I just thought was great for that character and great for the show. And it just makes a great beginning. And we watched it last night. Actually, I'd never seen it. We had a screening of it last night on a big screen.
Aww. Tell you what,
Mick Jagger on a big screen really works.
Got your own rock show going on there.
Yeah. And then the Leonard Cohen was used as a sort of, because we were half filming in Greece and it's a story that's very much set in Greece and there's a sort of lyricism to his, you know, his amazing poetic lyrics. And that gets used in episode two as a sort of counterpoint to what our lead character is doing.
In episode two,
he goes to a group sex session and somehow putting Leonard Cohen against that makes it strange and odd and not sexual, but something else.
James Wood, creator of Malice, in an interview you can watch in full on our YouTube channel, Soundtracking Extra. And do go and check out Malice. As I said, it's available on Amazon Prime TV now. And so, finally, sorry, that was a long-winded way of getting to Ryan, wasn't it? But who once again turns to his cousin, Nathan, for the score to Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, and we'll begin with his cue, Betrayed. Ryan, huge congratulations on the new film. I had the best time.
Oh, great. Thank you.
The tone of it particularly is just fantastic. It's just proper belly laughs at moments in that film.
It's great. I love that. Thank you.
Do you set out with, because this is the third of the films now, but they all just have their own identity. They're obviously part of a, you know, a kind of collection, but each one is very much standalone and has its own thing as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think about tonally how you want it to be and pushing things with that based on the previous two films?
I mean, kind of, not necessarily as a strategic, well, I did that and so now I should probably do this. But for me, it's more just a product of each one of these films is still another movie that I'm making. And every movie I make, I guess I get bored easily. And so I always want to have a new challenge. And I also feel like I'm going to do the best work for the audience if I'm coming into something and I don't know how to do it necessarily. I don't know that I can accomplish it or pull it off. And that always means trying something new, I guess. So for me, it's really staying engaged. And luckily, I have a partner in these movies, Daniel, who feels the same way. So, yeah.
He is having
the best time with this character. You feel it. It just pours off the screen.
Yeah.
The Cuban heels, you know, all of
his
that.
His style in this one. Yeah, I really love. Yeah.
His appearance on The View, all this. It's how involved does he kind of get with his character, but also with the relationship his character has with other characters? Because him and Josh in this are fantastic. This great.
Great. Yeah, that's the essence of it. And that's where he really engages. I mean, you know, with this one, for example, it was actually here in London after we were at the film festival with Glass Onion. He and I sat down and I kind of gave him a napkin sketch of sort of what I thought we would do for the next one. And he was quite excited about the notion of doing something more grounded and more in that tone as the next, just as changing it up. Then I go off and write the script and I come back. And then really what we engage with is really scene work. And in terms of like, for me, after having spent all this time alone in a room writing this thing, to then get together with Daniel and really stress test each one of these scenes that he's in and really find new depth and new layers that we can bring to it. To me, that's where the whole process actually starts coming alive.
You know? I can't imagine how you write this on a napkin like pitch, because it's so intricate. There's so much kind of, we talked about that the last time in terms of like, you know, backwards creating a puzzle almost in a way in terms of writing these scripts and how you go about it.
This one was tough. This one was the hardest of the three by far. Yeah. And also throwing in, because, you know, it is kind of about faith, and it's faith is something that's really has a lot of personal dimensions to me. And I wanted to get that right. I wanted to genuinely have the movie engage with that and not pull punches, but I also didn't want it to be didactic or feel like it was just wagging a finger in one way or the other. And so, so getting that balance right on top of the intricacies of the mystery. Yeah, this was a tough one.
That playlist help? You said you always have a playlist.
I always have a playlist, Oh, yeah, absolutely, Yeah. You need a playlist.
What kind of things were on this one? What were inspired in for whilst you were writing this
I mean,
one?
Some of them are in the movie. There's a Tom Waits song that ends the film, Come On Up to the House, off Mule Variations, and that was always kind of like central to and also that song has at its heart a generous spirit. And I think that, especially as I was delving into some of the slightly darker things in the script, that to me was a good orienting light, was remembering that at the end of it, you wanted the arms wide open and welcoming people into the movie. And so that helped a lot.
Well, the moon is broken and the sky is cracked. Come on to the house. The only thing that you can see is all that you lack. Come on up to the house. Oh, your crying don't do no good. Come on up to the house. Come down off the cross. We can use the wood. You gotta come on up to the house. Come on up to the house.
I like that thing in the film, not that. It's really great. It's good. We need that in the world, I think.
I agree.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Skimble Shanks, was that on the playlist?
No, it was not. But I could recite the entirety of Skimble.
Same.
I could do the whole, all of Cats, man.
Same.
All right. So when I was in high school, I wrote a play that won a few contests. And one of them was, it was staged in New York. They did a stage reading in New York. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting for me. I was like 17. They flew me out to New York for this stage reading with real actors of this play that I had written. And I had a night to see a night of theater. And all these young interns at the theater thing were like, oh, and I'm sure – I can't even remember. I'm sure it was probably like, you know, Joe Mantegna and Glengarry, or it was like, you know –
Doll's House
with – and it just probably legendary. Oh, you have to see this. You have the new Christopher Durang thing. You have to see it. And then I went and I saw Cats.
I'm happy for that.
And this is late run Cats. This is like – just like, you know, theater half full of cats. And I still loved it. But I'm a hardcore Andrew Lloyd Webber fan. I love his musicals. So it made me happy to make Blanc one too.
As does, with the Phantom of the Opera and the organ as
Yeah,
well.
We double up on it. Yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that wasn't Daniel playing the organ, but in my mind, I really hope it was.
Yeah. Well, it was his idea to do Phantom for that thing. What you hear is actually from the original soundtrack. We actually did a needle drop. So it is.
Is it?
Because you can't duplicate. It's the most amazing sound on any album in the world is those opening chords of the overture. So,
yeah.
So we just swiped it. We didn't try and beat it for perfection.
My first trip actually to London when I was 8 from Scotland was to see Cats.
No kidding.
So I have there. Those cereal boxes, the size of them, the whole world that you sat in was just amazing.
I love it so much. My mom's review of Cats when she came home and I was like, how was it? Because I hadn't seen it yet. And she goes, it's a lot of cats. That's my mom. Nailed it. Yeah.
Whisper down the line at 11:39 when the night mail's ready to depart.
Saying, Thimble, where is Thimble? Has he gone to hunt the thimble? We must find him or the train can't start.
All the guards and all the porters and the station master's daughters would be searching high and low.
Saying, Skimble, where is Skimble? For unless he's very nimble, then the night mail just won't go.
11:42, with the signal overdue, and the passengers all frantic to a man. That's when I would appear, and I'd saunter to the rear. I'd been busy in the luggage van.
Let's talk about the score, because it's got to fit in, you know, with in between all these kind of amazing choices that you've made and working with Nathan again. You guys have got such great kind of, you know, shorthand with each other, I guess. And I was interested to talk about how much or how little you wanted to kind of, if at all, pull through from the other films, both in terms of thematically, but also the kind of instrumentation and the type of music, because they've all been different locations. And even though it's a murder mystery, you've kind of lent into that on the needle drops sometimes with the location, sometimes with the needle drops fitting around that.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a lot of questions.
No.
Let's talk about score.
Yeah. We always kind of come at each one of these with a blank slate. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there are things that unite them. All three of them are traditional orchestral scores in a certain way, which leads to a certain sound. But with this one, we did want to kind of cut ourselves loose and give ourselves permission to go a little more atonal with some of the things. The movie itself has a little bit of a scarier kind of gothic vibe to it. And so we knew we wanted to be a little more unsettling with the score. And you know, the score has to fit the character of the movie. And this movie just had, by its nature, is a very different character than the first two. So yeah, the other thing that was interesting with this one, and we hadn't done this before we started editing, when we were still shooting in London, Nathan went into Air Studios. Mm-hmm. Although we recorded the eventual score at Abbey Road, he went into Air with a few musicians and they set up a big mic rig and he just recorded a bunch of different things, kind of a toolbox. Wow. And then he put some things together and gave it to us to use while we were editing, which it's not incredibly novel. I think that, you know, I think Nolan works the same way with his scores a bit. And like you hear other directors do this a lot. But for us, it was the first time we had tried it. It was wonderful. It ended up like really – because it having kind of like a palette to work with helped give us some definition in terms of the feel of the movie very early on.
Thank you.
And when you've got so many, I mean, the casting in all these films is just always so brilliant. And it's kind of in my head, I'm like, what comes first? Is it the character or the casting? And then there's got to be a journey of that from starting shooting, because you feel that every cast member puts so much into those performances and they're almost like so specific to those people.
Yeah.
It's so brilliant. It really, really is. And thinking about that musically in terms of all those characters, how do you represent those individually, you know, those relationships musically as well, or not?
There's different approaches to it. We haven't, and we definitely didn't with this one, take kind of the Peter and the Wolf approach of giving everybody their own motif, or the Wagner approach of giving everyone their own leitmotif. We thought that would get very complicated very quickly. So we kind of, I don't know, we tried to just serve each scene. And so as opposed to kind of using music. The other thing is this film has more of a traditional structure, murder mystery-wise, where for our first act, we meet and get to know all the suspects. The murder happens at the end of the first act, and the detective shows up. And that also means we're meeting a lot of people in that first act. And so the music is almost serves to kind of draw us through the exposition as opposed to chopping it up and trying to give us real different slices of each of these people.
Harp. Yeah. I love the sound of a harp.
Oh, we had an amazing harpist on this one that we worked with in our Abbey Road sessions. Yeah, the harp is really crucial. Nathan's a big, leans deep into the harp.
Yeah, it's such beautiful, a clever instrument.
Yeah, yeah.
It levitates you in a way.
It's so beautiful. Clever. It's also, very intricate and very, it does a lot of heavy lifting in the score, the harp, yeah.
Amazing one-liners in the script as well. Young, Dumb, and Full of Christ is one of my favorites.
yep.
Do you? It feels like as well, like the fleshy, flesh and blood, wiggly, wiggly thing as well. It's just it's like crying with laughter.
I think Daniel dug into that a lot more than was on the page. I think he just went,
Is that important for you though? To kind of, you know, you have this amazing ensemble to give them a bit of time to play and to explore. I mean, Glenn as well. Oh my God. It's so great. It's Martha. Yeah. The screams, the kind of physical performance of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a balance because in one way, these scripts are kind of, you know, jigsaw puzzles. You know, they're very tightly fit. So there isn't a lot of just riffing that happens. But at the same time, I always try and carve out during prep time to sit down with the actors. And I never do a full reading of the whole script, but I do sit down with them individually or in little groups and talk through the scenes. And that's largely where a lot of the exploration comes, where a lot of talking about, because very often they'll say, well, I think I feel like it's maybe missing this kind of a moment. And then we'll talk about it and figure out how that could work into what's there. And then on the day, there's some exploration, but it's largely, I don't know. It's largely just using the text and seeing them really play with the other actors. I mean, so much of On the Day is engaging with the ensemble around them that kind of, I think that's where the play comes from as opposed to kind of going off on different tangents.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Last time you remember you were talking about there was a scene that you had to cut out. We were talking about it maybe making its way to a short film.
No.
Was it Ed's performance of something? Anyway, I wondered, with this in terms of how much you had to kind of leave out and stuff. Is that the hardest? Is that one of the hardest parts?
A heartbreaker because, especially with these movies, you always get them up on their feet in the edit and then quickly realize that there's wonderful, amazing things. Sometimes some of the best stuff in the movie and you realize, oh, no, it has to go. Oh, no. And there's definitely a lot of that in this. So, Yeah, it's I'm hoping that, I mean, it's hard on Netflix. I'm hoping that in some way, shape, or form, we can get deleted scenes out there, because there's
a lot. Let's get the DVD back. Second DVD.
No, exactly. I'm working on it. But yeah, there's a lot of great stuff on the cutting room floor. I gotta say, I'm happy my actors don't punch me out, considering how much good stuff there is.
You started a pretense with the first film with the name, you know, with the band songs, you know, Radiohead, and then with the Beatles. Now we've got you too.
Yeah.
You started it, you know. You've got to continue it, Ryan.
I did start it. Well, it was kind of unintentional, because the first one, I love Radiohead's one of my favorite bands, and I love the song Knives Out, but it was just a great title.
Yeah.
And then the second one, I was like, well, okay, we'll keep this going. And now it's a thing. But yeah, it's a nice kind of structuring thing. And Wake Up Dead Man, I mean, it's a terrific title. It is a terrific song off of a really underrated album. Pop, mm-hmm. I think, is a really – I love that kind of little arc of U2 albums with Octoon Baby and Zooropa and then Pop.
Jesus, help me. I'm alone in this world, in a fucked up world it is too. Tell me the story, the one about eternity, and the way it's all gonna be. Wake up, dead man. Wake up, dead man.
But it also is, it has another musical origin for me. There's a, and I know it from, I originally heard Pete Seeger's version of it, but it's a Lead Belly, a Hughie Ledbetter song called Wake Up Old Hannah. And in Seeger's version, he puts in a verse where he says, I said, wake up old dead man. And that always stuck in my head as just this very evocative, amazing thing. So yeah, it's got a few different origins, but it's nice having that structure of, okay, it's always going to be a song.
Well, I looked at my partner. Well, he was almost dead. He was almost dead. Well, I looked at my partner. He was almost dead. Well, I said, wake up, old dead man. Well, help me carry my row. Help me carry my row. Won't you wake up, old dead man? Help me carry my row.
I wondered what the route is to you deciding on, you know, what it's going to be. Is it kind of, I don't know, you're diving into your favorite songs, or you're kind of on a research project to sort of find something, and then it kind of jumps out? Or do you already have an idea of kind of what the film's going to be called, or thematically, or
Yeah, I've generally had an idea from the start. I mean, Glass Onion, very much kind of the whole movie was ended up being built around that conception. And this one also, from very early on, I knew that Wake Up Dead Man was, no spoilers, but it was going to end up playing kind of like a central part in the movie. So yeah, thank God with all of them, I've kind of had the title early. And I think that's a good thing. I think if it was the last minute and I was scrolling through my iTunes, that would be kind of panic inducing. If I ever have something too obvious like Psycho Killer or something as the title, you'll know that I just panicked for the last minute. Yeah.
Are we going for another napkin premise for another film at this LFF?
No, I got nothing. I'm empty. I'm just done. And which is how you should feel at the end of every movie, I think. I think you should just, burn the Viking ship into the sea and just wash up on shore and just not have no idea. I'm writing my next thing, but it's not a murder mystery. It's something totally different to do next. I've had a great time, but I've done three of these in a row. I feel like doing something different next would probably be healthy.
Can we please just have the Knives Out musical, though?
Oh my God.
A proper, like,
I would love that.
Benoit.
And Benoit Blanc would love that.
Yeah.
You know he would.
I mean, come on. It's
Naza. Yeah, I can see it. Come on.
Yes.
Come on. And line of dancing girls.
Oh my. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Like in a mortuary and some kind
turn,
of like.
Kick turn. Yeah, I can see it. Yeah, come on.
I also just want to say congratulations on Poker Face as well.
Thank you.
Because I think it's an exceptional show. And just
thanks.
Natasha, I could.
Yeah, she's.
I could watch her sleep. In terms of music around that sort of thing, I just wanted to briefly, if you don't mind, the last couple of minutes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Of talk about when you were starting that in terms of, because it's got a real identity.
Banjo. Yeah. I was really sold on, well, look, I grew up, my uncle, Dennis, gave me a banjo when I was in high school, and I never touched it, sat in the closet. I graduated college and was broke and unemployed and had nothing to do all day. And so I picked up the banjo. And I lived in Santa Monica right down from McCabe's guitar shop. And so I went down and picked up Pete Seeger's How to Play the Five-String Banjo booklet and taught myself banjo. And that's also how I got into folk music. And so the banjo is something I deeply, deeply love. And it has it's like Steve Martin says, it's impossible to play a sad song on the banjo. But it also has a lot more tonal expression than you think. And so it was something very early on I thought, this is the identity of this character of Charlie Cale, is the Americanness of and the warmth of the banjo, I think, was important to it. And I think Natasha kind of was a little bit wary of it. She was like, oh, you love that ukulele music in there, huh? Oh, okay. I think she was imagining cool, like, rock jazz. I don't know what she was. But no, she was into it. And Nathan was fully on board. And we got some really talented players to come in and do the banjo parts. It was fun.
Yeah, I think it's the unsung hero, to be honest. I grew up listening to Billy Connolly
play
the banjo. The kind of cross between music and comedy that he would deliver was just absolutely, cuts through everything.
I love me some good banjo.
Ryan, congratulations.
Thank
so great to chat to you.
It's such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for your time.
From Nathan Johnson's score to Poker Face, that's Charlie's theme rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with the delightful Ryan Johnson. Always a pleasure, never a chore.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Huge thanks to Ryan and his team as well. Ryan taking the time to talk to us and his team for helping facilitate that wonderful chat. Wake Up, Dead Man and Knives Out Mystery is in cinemas from the 26th of November and will be up on Netflix from December the 12th. I've spoken to Ryan a couple of times before and he's always so insightful and thoroughly entertaining. You can find those chats at edithbowman.com, as well as a couple with Benoit Blanc himself, Mr. Daniel Craig. Please do follow us on your socials or at Soundtrackin' UK. And as I mentioned at the top, please do subscribe to our YouTube channel, Soundtrackin' Extra. We've got loads of great stuff up there. James Wood, as I mentioned, Tahar Rahim as well. And Russell Tovey, Tom Blythe and Carmen Emmy are also going to be up there talking about their film Plain Clothes. So loads for you guys to dive into. Please head over there, YouTube channel, Soundtrackin' Extra, and subscribe. Next up, as I said earlier at the start of the show, I'm so thrilled and really excited to finally get to share with you my conversation with Taron Egerton and Nick Rowland this Friday, talking about their film She Rides Shotgun that is going to be out to stream this week. So go and dive into that and then join me back here on Friday for Taron and Nick. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.